Our first speaker today is Professor David Merriman. He specializes in state and local public finance. Professor Merriman is Associate Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and he's a Professor of Public Administration at the University of Illinois in Chicago. His master's and PhD were in economics from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I like to think that he left here inspired by the Wisconsin idea, generating research that addresses societal challenges. His research record is really quite impressive in that it responds to questions asked by those directly involved in the policy process. For example, in response to the 2001 recession, he published papers on the fiscal health of states during and after that recession. Currently, he's co-directing a fiscal futures budget project. This is a long-term budget trend projection model for examining the structural deficit in the Illinois budget. He's a senior research associate with the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. He's been a consultant to the World Bank and a visiting scholar in Japan. And prior to moving to the University of Illinois at Chicago, he spent 20 years at Loyola University, where he was named Researcher of the Year. Now, on a personal note, Professor Merriman tells me that he bikes to work. It's an hour each way. No small feat in Chicago weather. And I must say that I'm intrigued by his name, Merriman. And in my dealings with him, this name seems very fitting. He is a merry man. And please forgive me, Professor, but I just can't help but wonder if you were a merry man during that NFC championship game last Sunday. All of us cheeseheads here in Wisconsin are pretty proud of our Packers. So his talk today is looking back, looking forward, budget lessons from Midwest states. Let's welcome him to Wisconsin.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's really great to be back in the state capital and back in Wisconsin. And I do owe really a great debt to this state and the higher education institutions from Wisconsin. And so today I want to talk a little bit about some fiscal history of the state, of the states, and what we might expect going forward. Sorry. Okay. So this is just a little outline of the main topics that I'm going to cover in my talk. The first thing, it will be just some background information on the relationship between states' economic health and their fiscal health, the fiscal situation that they're in. Then a little bit of history on the what happened over a recent decade fiscally to states, and in particular some evidence about Wisconsin. Then a little bit of prognostication about what might happen in the future, in the coming decade, in terms of states' fiscal health. And then some ideas, best ideas that we have in the literature, economists' ideas, about strategies for long-run effective fiscal management. And then at this particular time, those long-run things might be not at the top of your list, may not be things that you can quite deal with in the period of fiscal stress, and so some tips on what you can do in a period of fiscal stress in terms of budgeting, and then a little bit of just one slide on some special considerations about Midwest states. So first, the relationship between a state's fiscal and economic health. In particular, during recessions, we think a lot about the fiscal situation of states. What typically happens as you move into a recession is actually that when a recession starts, usually unemployment rates go up slowly at first. During the course of the recession, the unemployment rate rises. And then even after the recession ends, unemployment rates continue to rise for some period of time. And that's also been true in this recession. The most recent recession ended in December of 2009, so we're more than a year after the end of the recession. Yet unemployment rates rose for quite a considerable period of time. They're starting to fall. These nearly always, this increasing the unemployment rate nearly always puts stress on state budgets. It puts stress on state budgets in two ways. First, there's usually a severe drop in revenue. And in particular, in the last two recessions, the drop in revenue has been greater than we might have expected based on past history. So when the unemployment rate goes up, of course, if a state like Wisconsin that has an income tax is going to have some decline in revenue because people aren't working, they aren't paying as much income tax. But there seem to be additional factors that cause large drops in revenue. And these large drops in revenue continue even after the recession ends and are larger than we have expected historically. So that puts a big strain on the revenue side, and that's true as sales taxes as well. In addition to that, there is a strain on the expenditure side. Typically, entitlement programs, and most importantly, Medicaid, enrollments go up. Those enrollments lag the increase in unemployment rates, so that what typically happens is people become unemployed, they lose some income in their families, they initially are able to get by with family resources, friends' resources, maybe they're healthy at first. Eventually, though, as those resources decline, they start to enter the Medicaid rolls, they start to enter need other social services. And so with some lag, what you see is a big increase in the demand for spending for state programs, particularly for social service programs. And so this kind of two-edged thing puts a tremendous pressure on state budgets when we have bad economic times. And another thing that we've seen historically, and I don't say that I completely understand this, but we've seen increases in state spending for education in the last three recessions. The current recession, it's a little too early to tell, but typically, I think what's going on there is that the states, to some extent, the local governments are usually stressed in bad economic times as well. And so one way that there's a political pressure for more education spending in the K-12. So across the country, when we looked at that, we saw really pretty rapid increases in state education spending, even during periods of recession. All of this puts the state really in a fix. So in that sense, recessions and bad economic health is really difficult on the state fiscal situation, and that's what we're seeing across the country today, of course. It's not quite as true that bad economic growth or slow economic growth puts pressure over the long term on states. So when you see states that are growing rapidly, the southern states in the 80s and the early 1990s, those states had very high economic growth, but they still had a lot of fiscal pressures. Some of the more slow-growing states were able to adapt to that situation and didn't have fiscal pressures. So I think there's a real difference between cyclical economic effects and long-term economic effects in terms of the relationship between the fiscal health of the state and the economic health of the state. Okay, so what happened during the last decade? And when I say the last decade, I have to apologize a little bit because the nationally comparable data on revenues and particularly on expenditures only go up to 2008. That's the most recent data we have. It's fiscal 2008 because it takes a while to collect it from all the states, put it on a comparable basis. So when I talk about the last decade, I'm talking about the period 1998 through 2008. I think that's actually a really important period to think about because that's prior to the recession. So the kind of trends that we saw are kind of the trends in a kind of normal economy. We had a recession in 2001, but basically it's a normal, it's a kind of relatively normal period, and we can talk about how did states react over that that economic period. Well, nationally, state revenues and expenditures have risen faster than inflation. There has been a real growth in state spending. Wisconsin revenues, taxes, and expenditure have risen somewhat slower than the national average. And Wisconsin has lagged behind other states in getting revenues. I'm going to show you some more detail on these statistics in a minute. And Wisconsin, interestingly, during that period, had less increase in Medicaid, which is one of the big drivers of state spending, than other states. So in your briefing materials, there's detailed graphs and data which show data for five Midwestern states. To make the presentation a little bit simpler, I've stripped out everything except Wisconsin and the national average to look at some of these statistics. So this is real per capita state total general revenue. And I should make one point. These numbers come from the Census Bureau, and these are nationally comparable numbers. Different states have kind of different things that they put in their general funds budget. A lot of times you'll see national organizations like the NCSL, the National Conference of State Legislators, and the National State the budget experts talk about general funds budgets. You should be very skeptical about looking at general funds budgets. You really want to look at a broader measure of the budget because different states do different things within the general funds. So this looks at a broad measure and a comparable measure across states. What do states spend their money on? Where do they get their revenue from? And what you can see here is that Wisconsin started out the period, this is in 1998, as a relatively high spending state. These are, again, real per capita figures. But over the decade from 1998 to 2008, Wisconsin became much more like the nation. Its spending rose a bit, but then it leveled off. And real spending basically did not change between about 2000 and 2008, real per capita spending in Wisconsin. Meanwhile, for the rest of the nation, that spending went up, and it basically caught Wisconsin. So in 2008, Wisconsin was very typical of the nation in terms of real per capita spending. Tax revenues are one component, an important component of revenue. There are basically three important components of revenues. That is fees, taxes, and intergovernmental revenues, and I'll talk a little bit about intergovernmental revenues later. But in terms of taxes, Wisconsin was relatively high spending state at the beginning of the decade, but also particularly a high taxing state. It got more of its revenue from taxes compared to other states, a larger share of its revenue from taxes compared to other sources. Again, that changed pretty much over the decade, and by the end of the decade, by 2008, Wisconsin taxes were only a little bit higher than other states around the country, typical states around the country. And if you look at that, that's also true relative to the Midwest, if you look at the briefing materials. So in particular, an important source of revenue is intergovernmental revenue. That's revenue from mostly the federal government. And here, Wisconsin was a little bit below the national average at the beginning of the decade. It stretched up to be about equal with the nation by 2003 or so, and then lagged behind later. I think I have an explanation for that. Some of you may know better if you've been around, but that's an issue that I think I would be concerned about in your state. Why is Wisconsin garnering less intergovernmental revenues than other states, and why less than it used to garner on a per capita basis? Okay. This shows the total general expenditure of Wisconsin. Much like revenues, Wisconsin started out relatively high but is pretty much at the national average by the end of the period. So in terms of intergovernmental revenues, one of the biggest sources of intergovernmental revenues is Medicaid revenues, matching revenues. Of course, in Wisconsin, I know the federal government pays the lion's share, more than half of the costs of Medicaid. And what Wisconsin has done, which it's, I think, to be lauded for, I don't know all of the details, but it's really done a better job of controlling its Medicaid expenses than a lot of other states. I should say these figures for Medicaid go only to 2006. The census doesn't give us exactly the numbers we need for Medicaid, so we went and got data from somewhere else. So this particular graph looks at 1996 to 2006. And what we see here is that while Medicaid was rising relatively rapidly around the country, Wisconsin, starting in about 2001, really had Medicaid expenditures level off and was spending less than the national average on Medicaid. Now, I understand some things have happened recently that may change that. And as I said, coming out of a recession, you're going to see increased demands for Medicaid. And that's, in most states, that is the first or second most important budget item now behind K-12 education. And so that's likely to put a strain on the budget and something that, you know, all state legislators really need to be aware of in thinking about how they're going to manage their budget. What are you going to do about Medicaid? Okay, so what can we expect over the next decade? And there's short-term and long-term questions. I'm a little bit behind, so I'm going to go through this quickly. In the short run, as I said, unemployment's going to be high. You're going to have more budget strains. Even though you've gotten through the recession, things are likely to be very difficult over the next couple of years because you're going to get that lagged effect on spending. Revenues are probably going to come back only slowly given your tax system. And I think another concern is that there's an incredible amount of attention now in the financial sector about loans to the state and local sector. And I think interest rates are going to go up, and it's going to be more difficult to secure financing for any borrowing that you might want to do. Over the longer term, I'm afraid that the news is also quite disconcerting. The U.S. General Government Accounting Office, Government Accountability Office, did a major project looking at the state and local sector, and they predict a kind of long-term fiscal imbalance. The driving forces behind that fiscal imbalance are healthcare costs, just as they are at the federal level. Medicare at the federal level is making it very difficult to balance the federal budget. At the local level, at the state level, it's Medicaid and other healthcare programs. The cost of those programs are rising. The population is aging. They're going to need more healthcare spending. And so those are going to be real challenges, real fiscal challenges in the future to figure out how to plan for that and think about what the state can do to continue supporting these medical expenditures. Just one additional factor, this is a slide from the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington, D.C., and they predict that 2012 might be the worst fiscal year yet for states. And the reason for that, although the revenues are coming back, so things are starting to get a little bit better, but the federal stimulus program, which provided aid to states, is going away in July of this year. We're basically going to see the end of federal stimulus money. And that has bailed out a lot of states. I know in my own home state of Illinois, it's supported a lot of the spending that we needed to do. And that's going to make it still more difficult. So fiscal 2012, we expect to be a very challenging year. And I'm sure you're aware that it will be in Wisconsin also. So what are some long-run strategies for effective fiscal management? Well, the first thing is to try not to shoot yourself in the foot. Try not to make things worse. So some things you really want to think about avoiding is one-time fixes. I know that there is a great temptation to say, how can we get through this year, or in the case of Wisconsin, how can we get through the next 2 years? And often things are done like selling of assets or tax amnesties. Those kinds of things might get you through the current budget year, but they're going to come back to haunt you because especially if you do a tax amnesty, a lot of times that revenue ends up coming in sooner, but then in the future you're going to actually get less revenue because of that. If you sell an asset and you lease it back, you're going to have to pay the lease payments. So those kinds of things are really to be avoided if you possibly can. Stagnant and antiquated revenue sources, you've got to have your revenue sources keyed to your economy. I'm not going to say much here because I think Bill Fox is going to talk about this somewhat in his talk. Uncontrollable spending commitments. Again, just as on the revenue side, you want to be sure you're thinking about how this is going to affect the economy, how it's going to affect demographics in the future. Making spending commitments that can be small now but can really rise in the future. An example of that is covering retiree health care benefits. A lot of states have said, okay, when government workers retire, we'll give them a good deal on retiree health care benefits. Didn't cost very much at the time, but what's happened is the cost of health care has gone up. You have more people are living longer and longer. You have more retiree benefits. Those things are very hard to control, and they're commitments that you've already made. They're kind of, in some sense, at least a moral contract. And so you need to be looking far in the future when you make those kind of long-term commitments. Another thing is the concealed cost or burden shifting to local governments. Another issue that a lot of state governments try and think about is they want something done, they need something done. Well, you can just put a mandate on local government and ask the local government to do it. Of course, the local governments are struggling with their own fiscal problems. So, again, something you have to be very cautious about. And then finally, I guess this is a pretty obvious one, but borrowing to pay reoccurring expenses. You want to make sure that if you have some reoccurring expenses, you have a revenue source to support that. Those are things that you shouldn't do, basically. Some things that you should consider is, I think, budget transparency is incredibly important. So, and this is important not only so outside groups understand the budget, but so that you understand the budget, so that you can get the big picture as legislators, even so that the governor can get the big picture and understand what is going on with the budget. really important thing is to budget categories on a consistent basis. Sometimes states will have a reorganization of the government, of what offices do. That's a great thing to do. It makes it more efficient. But when you do that, you want to make sure you can track what's going to being spent on different categories of services. So when you should think about the way that the census does this, which is you budget for functions, you don't budget for programs. So you talk about what is the function the government is doing. That there are lots of different programs that can do that. But what you want to do is be able to track the functions. How much are we spending on healthcare? How much are we spending on education? How much are we spending on juvenile delinquency? You want to be able to track that over time and consolidate that across budget categories. You want to identify one-time and reoccurring revenues and expenses. A particular model of this, I think, is Florida, where they, if they have a one-time revenue, they budget it separately. It doesn't go in the general funds. There's a separate category for it, and they say what they're going to use it for, and keep track of that. Similarly for one-time expenses. They keep track of those one-time expenses separately, and they can account for those, and I think states should do that in terms of their budgeting process. You need to publish multi-year spending and revenue forecasts. I know that you have a two-year budget process here in Wisconsin, so that helps a little bit, but 2 years isn't nearly long enough. You need to think about a longer time period. And finally, you need to think about building rainy day funds, funds that so that when you do have a fiscal crisis, you can get through it. The rainy day funds that states have built up around the country are not nearly large enough to get us through recessions. We know that from the past couple of recessions. A 5% or even 7% of your general fund just won't be enough. And some states have started to take this seriously in terms of rainy day funds. But otherwise, when the economy turns down, you're going to have a crisis. Or even when you have a natural disaster, you're going to have a crisis. Okay, so right now we have a period of fiscal stress. What kind of things can you do to get through it? Well, the first thing that you can do is anticipate the fiscal stress. It's a little late to anticipate the fiscal stress coming out of the last recession, but you can think about, okay, how long is this going to go on? You're going to do a two-year budget, so I guess you'll be through fiscal 2012, fiscal 2013. Are you going to be out of it in fiscal 2014? Are revenues still going to be down? I don't know that, but I think a competent economist looking at past trends in the unemployment rate can give you a guess as to where your revenues are going to be, what the state's going to look like, and you know how much revenue you're going to get beyond 2012, and what's going to happen to the spending demand, what's going to happen to Medicaid enrollments over that period, other kinds of human services programs that you might need over that period. You want to be looking far ahead. Thanks. That really is my second point. Understand that fiscal stress is probably likely to persist a long time, even though the recession is end. Use a comprehensive budgeting process. If you have some budget rules that put in, budget rules that require, if you're going to do a tax cut, you're going to have a spending cut. You want to do that in a comprehensive fashion. You certainly want to do that beyond just the general funds. And you want to encourage explicit trade-offs. So if you say, well, we're going to cut taxes now and we'll figure out what spending we're going to cut later, that's going to be hard to do. It's better if you can put them together. In fact, it's better if you can make people vote on them both at the same time. And then you're really going to decide, is it worth it? You know, what explicitly are the trade-offs? And the final category on this slide is to use evidence-based studies to prioritize competing categories. And our next speaker is going to talk about that. So again, I won't say much. He's going to have lots of good advice for you on how you can do that. Okay. During this period of fiscal stress, as Karen said, I think state government, you know, needs to be particularly concerned about vulnerable categories of people, and in particular children, during these periods. And here's something: when you make a fiscal policy decision, I really urge you to categorize by the policy variable rather than by the political variable. Too often we get into kind of spreadsheet politics. We're talking about, is it going to help my district? Is it going to help this geography versus another? You may have to do that, but at the very least, put out the policy variables too. What are the groups being helped? What are the categories of people being helped? And try and get people to talk about those issues. Those are really, in the long run, the important issues for the state. Better targeting of existing spending. So if you have to cut spending, okay, maybe you have to make a cut in spending, that doesn't mean that it has to be an across-the-board spending. You can target it to the groups that really most need it. In Illinois, we spend a lot of money on aid to education, local district education, but we don't target it very well. So kind of wealthy, high-wealth suburban districts get a lot of that aid for reasons that really weren't even designed in terms of the policy. So it's a time to come back and look at why are we spending the money we're spending, where we're spending, can we target it better, especially in an era where we have less, can we think about that? Sometimes spending cuts might also be accompanied by spending increases. So if you have to cut a program and that program benefited a lot of people, you might still do some targeting spending increase to deal with the most vulnerable populations. You might make it a smaller program, essentially. And you might do targeted reductions in relatively ineffective tax expenditures. So revenue, things in the revenue code that are reducing your revenue should be thought of as in the same vein as a spending category. One example of this is the exemption for food. That's often thought of in the sales tax, often thought of as a progressive program. Maybe Bill will have more to say about it. But my own view is it's not a very progressive program, that we spend an awful lot of money exempting food from the sales tax. And it actually doesn't do that much to help lower-income people. If we want to help lower-income people, we could do a much kind of better targeted tax credit for them for the sales tax, and we could tax food for upper and middle income people. Another example of this is a film tax credit. It's not very effective at creating jobs. It's got a lot of discussion recently, and it's a program that may not be very effective. I think it would be helpful to have, you know, if you're going to continue that kind of program, it'd be helpful to have a real rigorous study of it. You know, are you really getting your money's worth for that kind of program? So just a few special considerations for the Midwestern states. The Midwestern states are losing population as a group. The reason the Midwestern states are losing population, the most important reason, is the auto industry. The auto industry in Michigan is declining. A lot of Midwestern states are suppliers to that auto industry. Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin all have major suppliers to that industry. As that industry shrinks, we're finding it harder to hold on to jobs. As we find it harder to hold on to jobs, we're going to lose people. Or actually, we're not losing people. We're just getting population less fast than other areas of the country. That is a region-wide problem. No state's going to be able to solve that on its own. The economy of the Midwest is going to have to evolve. It is evolving. Clearly, the decline of the auto industry has been going on for a long time. The nation as a whole, and Midwest in particular, the population is aging. That's going to have lots of fiscal implications, and we need to look into those and study those. And the other thing to recognize is that the Midwest is highly interdependent. One of my colleagues at the University of Illinois, Jeff Ewings, has studied this extensively. He tells me that about a third of Wisconsin's out-of-state trade is with the four states, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. Only about 10% of Wisconsin's out-of-state trade is with foreign countries. So if you want to think, what should we do to stimulate Wisconsin sales? What should we do for the Wisconsin economy? It might be good to think about working with your neighbors in the Midwest on some kind of regional strategies to build up the economy. Those might be just as important as trade missions to India or trade missions to China. Those economies are going to be very important partners in your economy as well. And so thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you today. We'll take a few questions.
We have time for a couple questions for Professor Merriman. Do you have a question, Senator, right here, Jen?
In Wisconsin,
just a second, we're going to hand you the mic. We audio tape this for legislators who drive long distances to the Capitol. So.
Thank you. I'm State Senator Kathleen Beinhout. In Wisconsin, we are addicted to tax credits. We have never met a tax credit that we don't like. And I struggle with the line that I know is right, but we just can't accept, which is that delayed revenue is spending, or foregone revenue is spending. In your experience, when you look at how other states have dealt with this, and I know I'm moving from economics to practical politics, right. But when in your experience, what have other states done to make that link between foregone revenue and tax credits equals spending.
Well, I don't know how extensively you do this in Wisconsin. Many states have a tax expenditure report, and that they list the tax expenditures from kind of highest to lowest. And I think that is a valuable public information campaign. So when you list spending, you should list tax expenditures right along with them. What are those tax expenditures? And the other thing to do is to kind of subject them to rigorous benefit cost analysis. Some states have done that, but generally these tax expenditures come under pressure during times of fiscal stress like this, when you're thinking about, okay, so we got to do something to cut spending. Let's put tax expenditures in the mix as one of the categories we're going to consider. That's been my experience of what other states have done.
One more question. We're going to give priority to legislators and high-ranking state agency officials. In the question?
Thank you. Representative Joe Parisi. I was intrigued by your last slide when you talked about regional cooperation. We see a lot these days of something that looks a little more like border wars with states trying to poach businesses from other states. Could you comment on the long-term viability and, you know,
well,
how good of an idea is that?
I think in terms of what we know, I know that the Family Policy Center seminar had a speaker in a previous year who talked about, you know, why do businesses locate where they locate? You know, and taxes are one factor among many. Public services are one, a very just as an important factor as taxes. And of course, labor cost and labor quality, transportation, those are the overriding factors. So trying to poach businesses from one state or another, it may score a few points. Over the long run, it's not a very good economic development strategy. I think you need to go much more fundamental and think, you know, what are we going to do in terms of our transportation system, our education system? Those are the kinds of things that are going to build up your economy.